It's not like it's a competition that's on again next year. You have to wait a full Olympic cycle to go again. Realistically, most of the team aren't going to be here again for the next Olympics, so it's like it's do or die.
For the best Olympics coverage, subscribe to the OTB Highlights podcast feed on the OTB Sports app now.
The 2021 British and Irish Lions Tour.
On Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, lead partner of the British and Irish Lions.
Yeah, you're welcome along. So we have much to discuss with Matt Williams, and we also have Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent with us. We have a decider this Saturday, live commentary here on Off the Ball, the Lions against South Africa. Rory, all comes down to the next 80 minutes. Six changes for the Lions. Gatland has rolled the dice once again. What do these changes tell us about the way Gatland is going to try and turn the tide here against South Africa?
Well, firstly, you're very optimistic with 80 minutes, Joe. It'll be about 2.5 hours, judging by last Saturday. The selection, I think the selection value price is probably the most telling one. I mean, the back three changes are clearly designed to cut out the aerial mistakes that basically led to the Lions undoing. I mean, you just can't drop the ball that frequently. And to be honest, I think Duhan van der Meer is very lucky to hold on to his place. The selection value price just says to me tempo. It's all about tempo. And Gatland was very frustrated by the way that Springboks were able to slow the game down during that long and unending first half, where the Lions just wanted to play with some sort of pace to, you know, keep the ball in play, keep the ball alive, because they know that they are fitter and have more games under their belt. They're more match fit than the Springboks, but the Springboks wouldn't let them, and the refs wouldn't let them because they were tentative, because Razzie was in their heads. You know, the front row changes are designed to fix the scrum. The back three changes are designed to fix the aerial game. But I think it's the selection of Price that says to me that they want to play at a higher pace and try and replicate maybe what they did a little bit in that first test, which wasn't much of an improvement on the second test. But I think that's what they're trying to go for.
Matt Williams, what's your take on what Gatland's done here with his team selection?
Well, the selection is an interesting one, Joe. I concur with this. All the comments Rory made, you know, Dwayne van der Merwe should go and buy a Euro Millions ticket. He's the luckiest man in Europe right now. How he's going to come out with three tests is quite extraordinary. Now, people have drawn this analogy of this team, what Gatland's done to Australia 8 years ago when they lost the second test and they went to Brisbane. I was at that game and made all those changes, dropped Brian O'Driscoll, and they won. But what people are forgetting in all these changes that Gatland's made is that the Australians completely stuffed up. Now, a good mate of mine was on that staff. He was a coach on that staff. And later he told me all the things that they did wrong on the field, as in changing tactics on the field, made huge errors in their changing of their kicking game and their line-out play and so on in that test. Now, the Springboks aren't going to do that. You can make all these changes here, and I'm not disagreeing with anything that Rory said, but Dan Bigger passed the ball three times in the second test. That is just an appalling statistic and an appalling statement. So they just don't play. They didn't play any rugby. If you've got a 10 that's only passing the ball three times in a test match, and he was on for the best part of 60 minutes, maybe a bit less, that tells you this team's not playing any rugby. They're not allowed to play some rugby. But their ambition has been so limited in the test matches compared to what's happened before. Gregor Townsend is the attack coach. Like, what's he coaching? So, you know, they're coaching a kicking game and a running with forwards game into other forwards. So they have to... I don't think it really matters who they pick to an extent, because they've got a very good side, very good squad. I disagree with a number of the selections, but, you know, coach knows best. Gatland's pulled the rabbit out of the hat in the past. Mm. But unless they change some tactics really drastically, it's not going to change the outcome, because it wasn't necessarily personnel. I know they dropped the ball a lot, they did, but it was their inability to dismantle the Springboks attack that is their problem. And they really didn't do it in the first test. They did it a little bit better, but they certainly didn't do it last week. And I think the box will be a little bit better because they've had a third game under their belt. They'll improve. Now, they've lost a couple of key players as well. But really, I think this is going to come down to a change of tactics rather than a change of personnel. Personnel can change your tactics. And I think when you see Finn Russell on the bench, that he's a two-edged sword. He can win you a game and he can lose you a game at this level. But he's got an X factor. And right now, there's no one in that line that's bringing them an X factor not even like Chisholm Colby or Mampipi on the opposition wings. There's no one there that's bringing that. And that's, to me, is the major issue facing the Lions.
Yes. Rory, would you agree? South Africa are probably quite happy with the way the Lions are going about their business at the moment.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't know if the squad Gatland picked was designed to play this game, particularly in the back three. I mean, he's got running back three, and he's asking them to chase the ball all the time. I mean, I put out a tweet on Saturday after the game, tongue-in-cheek a little bit, but Hugo Keenan was the best fullback in terms of positioning and aerial ability at the Six Nations, and he didn't even get a text from Warren Gatland to say you're in consideration. I mean, if you're going to play this way, why not call up Rob Kearney, for God's sake? You know, like, if all you want from your fullback is to catch and kick, then don't pick Stuart Hogg. I know Liam Williams picked up an injury along the way, but, like, Hogg wasn't designed to play this way. Hogg is designed to run the ball back. He's designed to step into the line. He's designed to pass the ball. He's designed to be a second distributor. But they're not playing to their players' strengths. I know that South Africa's line speed is incredible and puts you under enormous pressure, and they feed off turnovers and they feed off turnover penalties. And once they kick the ball into your half, they squeeze you through the maul and they force another penalty, and they'll either kick over three or they'll go to the corner. And they have that incredible, you know, they almost dare you to play. And Gatland, you know, he almost had success in that World Cup semi-final, and I think he's trying to replicate that game plan to a degree. But like, he's got such talent in his squad. I mean, I don't think it's the best line squad of all time, and certainly in the back line, there's no O'Driscoll there, and there's no Sexton, and there's no, you know, Owen Farrell is probably the most talented or the most kind of high profile back he has, but he's clearly obviously not in form, so they're not picking him because of what happened at Saracens this year. So, you know, their strengths are in the pack, but their pack's been beaten up, and he's kind of gotten himself into this hole where the pack isn't good enough to win this game, and the back three that he's had so far has been cleaned out in the air in the second test, having won the first test in that department. I've rarely seen a swing like it. So he's kind of in this final week with, you know, a team of players who've been on the go for 50 weeks now, plus their pre-season. So, like, he's had them in the camp for 7 or 8 weeks, and maybe they have a couple of starter players they've been running in training that they could potentially pull out of the bag this week. But like, why haven't we seen them so far? It's been very frustrating in that regard. So I think Matt's right. I think, like, selection is, you know, potentially fiddling around the edges in some ways. Obviously, if the lads are all dropping the ball, you have to change them, because you can't have that. Like, that's just not at the level. And against a team like South Africa, you've got to get people who can do that job. And the scrum is another element. I think he's partly banking on the fact that, you know, almost South Africa played their semi-final last weekend. Or sorry, South Africa played their final in the semi-final, a bit like England at the World Cup, that the emotion they expended last week and the high of, you know, resting a throwback of the series might have taken that out of them. But I have a feeling that the Springboks will be even stronger this week, just like Matt says. So I'm not sure. The lines are running out of road a little bit, and it's going to take something very different and very special for them to pull it out of the bag. And from what we've seen in the first and second test so far, there's little evidence that they have that in their locker right now.
It does feel that way, Matt. I must say, it does feel like it really is advantage and momentum with South Africa. There is an air of conservatism over the Lions approach. I suppose really the approach of both teams. There is an atmosphere of let's make no mistakes. No mistakes, no mistakes, or they'll be punished. And even you think of the two South African tries, or you think of Henshaw's almost try on Saturday, they all happened when there was advantage ongoing. That's when, you know, the teams try a little something. But other than that, nobody is trying too much. And ultimately, I think, and on the basis of Saturday, you'd be confident enough in saying it, that's an atmosphere and a tussle in which South Africa will feel they're going to have the Lions number, no problem.
You have to say that what your summation's correct, Joe. I mean, as Rory outlined in the first half, I mean, both the tests have been pretty turgid affairs. They've been really disappointing, to be honest, from my point of view, really disappointing. And just in the, you know, my rugby community, where we text around and we don't talk for hours about it, but everyone has had the same opinion. They've just been so disappointing in their lack of ambition, their lack of vision, and even just their the variety. Like, just every line out is a maul. You've got three phases, then you kick, and the kick is a contestable kick across field. It's like when you're a little kid, the up and under, and you run through and try and knock your brother out before he catches the ball. I mean, it is really 101 basic stuff, and running headlong into each other. Now, the Africans have made an art form of this over you know, they're, since they're really their reintegration 27 years ago, whatever it is, 28 years ago, where they play this style of rugby at certain times in their history, and they're the masters of it. Like, you know, it's like playing New Zealand. If you're going to play the All Blacks and you're going to play a style of rugby that's so high risk, there's a strong chance you've turned the ball over. New Zealand are going to encourage you to play it, because when you turn the ball over, that's when they're at their best on turnover ball, and they'll kill you on turnover ball. Now, the South Africans are the headbutting champions of the universe, and all the Lions have done is get into a headbutting competition with the universal champions, and they're coming second. So they've got to think of a different way. And I would also, you know, just take us back to the selection. Robbie Henshaw is probably one of the only backs who's going to come out of this series for the Lions with his reputation enhanced. He's been absolutely sensational. He's one of the best, if not the best, inside centre in the world. You certainly bracket him up there with Gail Fiku, and you know, you let's see how the New Zealanders go on Saturday against the Wallabies. But you know, he's whoever's the best, he's equal. He's been great, and they're playing him at 13. They're playing him at 13 because they didn't select a genuine outside centre in their original squad. How Gary Ringrose didn't make this squad is still mind-boggling. And here we are, one of the best inside centres in the world has to be put at outside centre because they've got no one else. You know, I'm delighted for Bundiaki. He played really well. And to me, on the squad that was selected, that I felt was wrong, that's the best centre combination. But we're only getting in the third test. Now, that tells you, how do you get around South Africa? You've got to have someone who knows the ropes at 13. You've got to have someone who's experienced, and you've got to have someone with great skills. And they simply didn't select a squad to play that sort of game. And again, it's saying what Rory said. It's not fit for purpose what they've done. Now, is it too late to change? Well, with the Lions squad, they've proven over the years it's not. But we've got no evidence that they can change. And I actually think they're in a bit of trouble. They're in a fair bit of trouble for Saturday, because even though the Box have lost two key players, and Detoit is just a wonderful back row. I've watched him go through over the last few years, and he's fantastic. And obviously, Faf de Klerk is right up there with the best in the world as well. But the way they're going to play, Reinhardt's a great box kicker. You're not going to lose too much about him. He's a very big physical man. They're probably gaining a little bit of physicality with him. He's a bigger guy than Faf. And if you look at that back five of the Springboks with Esterbeg, De Jager, Montserrat, Colossi and Woese there, like that's a powerful back five. And their front row have proved they dominated over the other front row, and they've got another game under their belt. So where do the Lions go? And that's an answer that no one sort of can give me on, and I can't come up with you on that selection saying, well, this is where I think the Lions could get a real advantage over South Africa. There's just not a lot of room there.
It does seem, Rory, like there has been a fair degree of muddled thinking. Like the Gregor Townsend addition to the coaching ticket suggested a certain approach, which we haven't seen at all from Gatland or from the Lions. So, you know, I think it was Matt mentioned earlier, like, what's he coaching or what's he doing? You would wonder, because this is not the Gregor Townsend and how Scotland take on South Africa. This is very much how Gatland and Wales tried to take on South Africa. And then, you know, kind of late on, it's throw Finn Russell onto the bench. And I don't know, is he going to come on with 10, 12 minutes to go if they're trailing?
I mean, like, he could be on earlier, you know. I mean, like, Finn Russell could be on after 5 minutes if something goes wrong with Dan Bigger, and you know, it, like, do they trust him? If they haven't, I know he's had an injury and he's only just back from that. He hasn't played for 4 or 5 weeks. He's played very little with this team. I mean, there's been a lack of continuity through this tour. I mean, in other tours you've had, and partly COVID is to blame, but and also Russell's injury, but in other tours you would have these combinations in a kind of a, in the Saturday team, and then you get to the test matches and they've at least played once or twice together and they know each other, whereas, you know, there's a lot of mixing and matching going on. It was a big concern before the first test because no one had played together really in that team, but they managed to figure it out. And there is a bit of muddle thinking. It's very hard to get a read on anything because we're so far away from it, and because they're in that bubble, and it seems to be quite a together squad and quite a cohesive squad in terms of their team spirit and all of that sort of stuff. But you do wonder about the direction of travel in terms of, like, they were quite expansive in all their warm-up games, but their warm-up games were all against rubbish teams, apart from the South Africa A game. and they didn't really prepare them for the challenge that was at hand. And now they've flicked into playing this, into this arm wrestle rugby, and they haven't retained any of really the offloading game, the expansiveness that they had in those, in those kind of first four or five games, partly because they're not winning the collisions, and you know, South Africa are pressing them much, you know, they're under pressure, so they're not able to make the same calls. But you wonder whether they should have bothered with that expansive play. Maybe they should have just kept mauling against those teams and just playing a really horrible, I mean, it would have been a terrible watch for the entire tour. It wasn't great anyway, but like, they haven't, like, I don't know if those games prepared them. I know this has been a less structured tour in terms of what they got done before they could come over. I think everything was pulled together a lot later. I think even the coaching ticket, because, you know, Andy Farrell made himself unavailable, and a couple of other things happened that, you know, this team was put, was not Goran Gatland's first choice. But Townsend has been on board for a while, and Townsend brings a certain cachet and a certain identity. He once wanted to have Scotland as the fastest team in the world before the 2019 World Cup. Well, he's currently coaching the second slowest team in the world, and the slowest team in the world are beating them. So it's, I know he's become more conservative since the 2019 World Cup. He got burned by that experience and the way Ireland beat them up in Yokohama. But I mean, he's known as an attacking kind of maverick style coach. You know, that Glasgow team he coached was just unbelievable. I mean, are we trusting that Finn Russell can come in and do what he did in Twickenham a couple of years ago and turn the game around on its head after not playing with these players? I think it's a reach. There's good players in that pitch. They are good coaches. They're all established coaches. They've had this group for a long time. There's a sense that it's a last stand. There are kind of tangential things that you could grab on. But as Matt says, the evidence of what we've seen would suggest that South Africa are just going to get stronger into this series, and that the Lions, as they see the finish line and the bubble bursting finally for them, that they can get a bit of a break and all of that sort of stuff. There's danger signs everywhere for them. And yeah, this flicking a switch and just trying to play a different game is going to be very, very difficult if that's what they try and do.
Well, I would have thought so, Matt. Isn't that the great difficulty for the Lions, to suddenly try and change how they've played the first two tests in, what, one, maybe two pitch sessions, which with some battered bodies this week? Like, I would put it to you, I suspect that Gatland will say, look, there's no panic here. We need to win the aerial battle, and that will be our way into the game, and we'll get some momentum, and we'll get some front foot ball, and let's keep them moving again, and let's not have this as stop start. And actually, you know, I know we only scored 9 points in the second test and didn't even score in the second half, but it's not as bad as all that. We just stick with the plan, win the air, go from there. I would suspect that is how the Lions are viewing this third test. I can't imagine, Matt, they're going to rip everything up and start trying to play some champagne rugby here.
Absolutely. And if they did, the Africans will score 40 points.
Okay.
Give Colby and Mompipi half a chance and Ham at outside centre. I mean, these guys do have X factor. These guys are lightning. And that's what they did to England in the World Cup final. They ground them, they scrummaged them off the park, they mauled them, and then in the last, what was it, 12, 18 minutes, they scored two runaway individual tries.
Yeah.
And if you open up and do that, that's what they'll do. That's why they're such a hard side to play. Now,
there probably is a bit of method in Gatland's conservative approach, to be fair to him.
Well, I think if you look back on who's had success against this South African side over the last couple of years, it's the New Zealanders. And the way New Zealand played in those games, and both teams, to give the South Africans credit, we're running them down, but those games against New Zealand, in New Zealand, where the Africans were just so competitive, and I think they won one and drew one.
Yeah.
They were great games because the New Zealanders figured them out, and that is, you've got to get at them outside centre. You've got to get the ball to Am's outside shoulder, because then they're vulnerable. So there is plenty of space that the Africans give you, because they compact their defensive line and sprint up, which means there's plenty of space behind and on the edge. But the only way the Lions are getting there at the moment is kicking it. And that's too slow, because that lets all the Africans just move back and get there. They've got to find a passing way, a passing game, to attack the outside shoulder of the South African outside centre, Am. And right now they haven't got it. And as I said before, a lot of that's to do with not having a specialist 13. Now, Henshaw's a great player, and he's capable of it. Now, he's not a great 13, he's a quality 13. But he's a world-class 12. So that selection means they've recognised that too. I mean, Chris Harris, you know, good luck to the young man. He was just not mentioned. You know, he was Peter Brady, the invisible man. He just didn't exist out on that field in attack. Didn't get any ball, and neither did most of the backs. But if they're going to do anything, they've got to get to Am's outside shoulder with the ball in hand. that is not easy to do.
Because the South Africans are just so brilliant at coming up so quickly.
Yeah, well, you saw absolutely cut Elliot Daly in half in the first test, and he did another absolutely scything low tackle. I think it was on Farrell. I just can't recall exactly. Don't quote me on that. But he's a quality player in attack and defence, and they just deny you so much space. Now, why do New Zealand get around them? Because they're the best catch and pass team in the world, and their catch and pass is so effective and so fast that it threatens South Africans in those wider channels. And currently, this Lions team is not doing that. I mean, Dan Bigger is a good player. I admire the man, but that's not the game he's playing at the moment. A guy passes the ball three times and he's got 10 on his back. I think it's fair we could assume they're not looking at a passing game to get around them. So, again, you've got a change of... There's a requirement of a change of strategy. But do they have the skills in that group to get the ball to Am's, to that channel outside Am? And right now, in the test we've seen against South Africa A and the other two, they haven't.
Yeah, the Bigger stat is extraordinary. And, like, shock horror, they didn't score a try, you know. I think it's the first time since the 1980s I was reading that they hadn't scored a try in a test match. Rory Gatland was talking about things they'll need to improve on for this third test, and he's definitely talking about ball and play time and tempo again, and he's definitely putting some of it at the door of the South Africans. And, I mean, in fairness, why should they care? They're playing the game on their terms and doing what they need to do to win. But he's also putting some of the responsibility on the referee again this week. So again, this has been such a theme of this series, the pressure on the referees. So he said, we need to keep the ball in play, but also we want to talk to officials about making sure that we keep the game flowing. We felt that at every scrum there was an injury. So he said, we felt that at every scrum there was an injury. I presume he's talking about a South African player going down here. Slowing the game down, he said, I think there was something like 14 minutes of TMO time. And we've worked pretty hard from a conditioning point of view, but it really was a very stop-start game. That made it frustrating for us. We want to keep the tempo of the game up. We want to get the ball in at our scrums, get the ball in quickly at lineouts to play and to get a flow. And South Africa at the moment don't want to do that. Now, South Africa are not going to change. It's going to be interesting to see to what extent Matthew Reinal tries to limit the number of TMO minutes. I mean, there's not much he can do, I suppose, if a player goes down injured fairly regularly. Like, the South Africans are going to play with lots of experience and nous in that department. The question is, I suppose, to you, what odds of some kind of free-flowing game with lots of ball in play and a high tempo? I would think not great odds.
No, low odds, I would say. I'm sorry, I confused myself. High odds. I would say this game is crying out for and obviously they can't because they'd be compromised, a Nigel Owens or maybe a Wayne Barnes, an experienced, strong official who will take no nonsense and not be influenced by the camps on either side. And unfortunately, like, Reynolds is a good ref, but he's a French ref, so he's used to ref in top 14 games, which often descend into slow, turgid, lots of scrum resets, lots of kind of big gaps between teams and players. And, like, I'm not Nigel Owens' greatest fan, I'm not Wayne Barnes' greatest fan, but, like, they were never afraid to tell the players to cop on and get on with it. There's no reason why scrum resets take as long as they do. It doesn't take that long to set up. It's not a safety thing. It's the players are having a rest. And a good ref or a strong ref who is conscious of the fact that there's millions of people watching and this is rugby's window for entertainment and they have a duty of care to have some level of kind of, you know, not just watching loads of large men standing around breathing and kind of, you know, catching their breath. Like, get them to do it quicker. Like, that's all that anyone is looking for, really. Lineout's the same. There's no reason that the teams are walking into lineouts and taking 10 minutes to do their call and all of that rubbish that goes on as well. I mean, it's very little you can do when a player goes down injured because of player welfare. You got to, unless it's very obvious, you can't just pick the guy up, you know, the physios have to come on, all that sort of stuff. But the South Africans are deliberately slowing down the game because they're not in the same shape because of COVID and because of the long gap they've had between international games. They want a slower game. The Lions want a quicker game. We've seen it in all sorts of fixtures over the years where a team with a bigger pack would try and slow down the game. And it's up to the referee to stop that from happening. And the referees are spooked by what Razzy Erasmus did last week. He was in their head. I think he was in everyone's heads. When I was watching the game, I was seeing the little yellow circles and red circles of where each ruck offence was going, you know, in the first half, because I was seeing how would Razzy's video kind of, you know, look this week. And he was definitely in the way that the refs communicated to the players, the way they communicated to each other, the length of time they took to make every decision. And I had a lot of decisions to make. but everything took forever, and it just made for a terrible spectacle for those of us watching from afar. I mean, the fact that it's an empty stadium isn't helping either, because we've gotten used to seeing crowds in stadiums, as you know, back here, and now we're looking at an empty stadium with fake crowd noise again. We've basically got a podcast worth of commentators on the game, who, and it goes back to then Nigel Owens talking about it. It's just, everything is slow. It doesn't feel like, I don't know, it doesn't feel like a live event sometimes. It's just stopping. And I think Gatland's right to put pressure on to get them to speed it up. And I think a strong referee would do that. But I would fear that Reynal is not that referee.
Mm. Matt, there's a lot in this whole area. I mean, it's been an extraordinary couple of weeks. So give us your thoughts on some of Rory's points and what's jumped out to you.
Well, I think people should realise that what Rassie's video for referees would be nothing out of the ordinary. So the week of every test match, every coach of an international team would have a meeting with the referees team or a number of them, and would have footage to show and questions to ask. And it would be a very direct and blunt conversation, exactly as Rassie did. Now, Nigel Owen has confirmed that there's nothing unusual or confronting for the referees in the video. The problem was Rassie put it out publicly, and that was completely and utterly wrong. That humiliated the two Australian referees, and they're young referees. They're not great referees. They're not great referees. We're not producing great referees in Australia. And I was very surprised when they got the games. But, you know, he should not have put that out publicly. Why did he put it out publicly? Because he believed Gatlin publicly went after the TMO, and he felt the TMO in the first test didn't cite or didn't bring to the referee's attention three portions of foul play that the Lions definitely did, and all three of them were cardable. And there's absolutely no doubt about that. So all this has descended into the two coaches being absolutely out of line in the public arena. What has World Rugby done? Well, they're starting to do something about Rassie. But look, this Gatti started this, and World Rugby should have stepped in and should have said to both camps, don't say a word about officials, because if you do, X, Y, and Z is going to happen. Mm. And they didn't. So they've got this bun fight that's gone on, and did it affect the referees? Without doubt. And they're human beings. The TMO didn't want to be seen to be cheating. That's what he didn't want to be perceived as. And as a result, I don't think he made particularly good decisions. The same with the young Australian ref last week. He took forever to make the decision because he wanted to get it right, because he knew he was going to get his head ripped off if he didn't. Now, as far as scrums goes, don't start me. But until World Rugby steps in and says, right, when the referee blows his whistle, unless you're all assembled in 20 seconds or 30, 25 seconds, and we're going to have a stop clock, what they do in water polo and rugby league for scrums, and you're not ready, that's fine, you don't have to be ready, but there's going to be a penalty or bent arm against you. Like, until there is a sanction to speed up the game, teams like South Africa, the lowest common denominator, will slow it down, as did Saracens, as have done other teams all around the globe. We can't just point at South Africa. The scrums are a blight on all games, and the referees aren't doing enough for it. But the referees aren't empowered by World Rugby. So this tour, for me, has just been the greatest example of why World Rugby has to change so many of our laws. They're so out of date, so not fit for purpose anymore. And we're seeing most of them that are not fit for purpose on show in these three tests.
Yeah, it might prove a tipping point, actually, because these are such high-profile games, and the floating voter is tuning in to see, you know, let's see what rugby's got to give me. And you know, if you were a more casual fan, I don't think you'd be necessarily rushing back for the third test on the basis of test two. And so then, Matt, with a view to Saturday, as you said, the referees aren't empowered to do much if teams are very slow to get down and scrummage. As Rory rightly says, if players go down injured, I mean, whether you believe they're injured or not, you have to do the right thing and stop the game. It would seem, you know, the only area really where Gatland might get his wish is if the referees are a bit quicker on TMO time. You know, 16 minutes of the game was TMO time last Saturday. But then again, look, who knows? If there's one contentious moment after another, then you have to go to the TMO. So are you expecting another bonanza on the time watch this Saturday?
Yep. Yeah, and listen, let's keep Gaddy's comments in order. If after all the TMO stuff and they awarded the try to Robbie Henshaw, he wouldn't be whinging.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought know, I thought it was a try personally, but that, you know, that's not for us. That's another's topic. I can't see any of this changing, mate. Like, even on the if we just switch to the Australia-France series, which is a really great series, the teams are so positive, trying their heart out. Mm. There were so many scrums that took, the series of scrums took 3 minutes. Like, we just can't have that. Like, it's just, and we can't have it because if we look at this South African team, we look at the talent of some of these guys. We want to see Chislin Colby run with the ball. The world wants to see Chislin Colby run with the ball. The kids around the world want to see Chislin Colby run with the ball. We don't want to see forwards standing around for 45 seconds before they even bind up for a scrum. No one on the planet wants to see that. That has to change. It's not going to change this Saturday at Eden Park, when New Zealand play Australia, or at Cape Town, because the laws don't force the players to do it. And until that changes, we're going to get this trash that we're getting at the moment. And it is trash, and it's damaging the game. And this sits firmly, not at the at these players or the coaches, because their job's to win the game. They're told, win the game, within the laws, win the game. They're doing that. It's within the laws. It's the lawmakers who are at fault, and have been at fault for the best part of 15, 20 years. Joe, they have been asleep at the wheel with our officials. How can one official make all those decisions that we're asking them to make on the field? It is not possible. They get them wrong. So until we change a system where we help that official that is not the sole judge of fact and law, that there's someone else can make a decision, we're going to have these huge, long TMO things. It is the laws of the game that are dragging this down, and it's been dragged down across the world, not just in this particular series. This series has highlighted it. And I hope there's change. I'm not hopeful, though. I'm not hopeful. I hope, but I am not hopeful.
Mm. I'll get your predictions in a moment to wrap things up. First, Matt, am I right in saying you coached against Razzie the player back at Waratahs?
I did. I coached. Razzie was a wonderful back row playing out of Bloemfontein for Free State, the Cheetahs, as they were then, the Free State Cheetahs. And poor Rassie, he probably gets nightmares every time he sees me, but he came to Sydney 2 years in a row just by the luck of, or the bad luck of the draw. And he broke his jaw at the Sydney Football Stadium, I think it was 97. He got put in Royal North Shore Hospital in Sydney, and everyone, all his teammates had to go home, and he was left in Sydney. And all the guys were very good, the Waratah guys, and they got a roster, and people went to visit him and, you know, made sure he was all right, and the staff were fantastic. And he actually, we flew to Africa to play games, and he actually flew on the plane with us to Africa. So we got to know him. So he's a lovely guy, a real absolute gentleman. You know, you wouldn't find a nicer young man as he was then.
Yeah.
Comes back to Sydney the year later, breaks his jaw on the same ground again. None of it foul play, just accident. I've hardly coached any player. I don't remember coaching any player in all the years I've coached that broke a jaw. And Rassie broke his jaw twice against the Waratahs within 12 months on the same ground. So I don't think Sydney is his favourite place because he spent a lot of time in the hospital. Or the other one was he lived at Bloemfontein, and even the hospital in Sydney was better than that. But I'll let Rassie answer that one. But he's a gentleman. He is a gentleman. I'm really disappointed with what he did because I think he's let himself down and let the game down. But you know, we all make mistakes. But he I know he's a good person underneath that. He's just made an error of judgment under real pressure.
Yeah. And I presume you tried to sign him on the flight home several times over. I know how you work, Williams. I know what was going on.
Yeah, we tried to get him to sign over a glass of red as we were flying across the Indian Ocean, but he held strong. He held strong.
Saturday, Rory, South Africa to see this one out with all that momentum, or might the Lions do something here? What's your prediction if I had to push you?
Is that for me, Joe?
Sorry. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, shoot, Rory. Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
My bad. Well, my fervent hope is that someone in the Lions camp, maybe Dan Bigger, has gone to Warren Gatland this week and said, we want to play a little bit more. And that that this time next week, if we're back here talking again, that we're talking about players rather than coaches and referees, and that the players have taken ownership of what is supposed to be the highlight of their careers rather than a media frenzy around coaches, you know, videos and quotes and referees and all that sort of stuff. And I think that's what the Lions need. I think that players need to kind of, you know, I can only imagine what Johnny Sexton would be like in this environment if he was being told to kick the ball repeatedly over and over again. I'm sure at some stage he would override the system and would move the ball at times. He would see the space and move the ball. And like, Dan Bigger is in danger of letting this whole tour pass. Like, he's played in all three tests, but like, there's very little, apart from kicking the goals, very little memorable things that he's done, really. Mm. So my hope is that it is decided on the pitch by the acts of a great player rather than a bad TMO decision. And it's not rancorous next week. I mean, it's hope. I'm not expecting that to happen. I think it'll be very, very tight, certainly in the first 60 minutes. But I struggled to see how the Lions escaped the South African vice grip based on what we saw in the second half. It was the first half of the first test. I thought South Africa were very like the World Cup final, and the second half of the the first half of the first test, South Africa were very like the first half of the World Cup final, and the second half of the second test, I thought they were very like the World Cup final. And if they can put that together for 80 minutes, I don't think any, apart from New Zealand, really any team in the World Cup can live with them. And despite the players they've lost, I think they have too much continuity, cohesion. They know that game and they love that game, and we think it's ugly, but they absolutely love it. They embrace it. So I think they just got too much strength and belief and faith in their own system. The Lions just don't have that, barring Finn Russell coming on and doing something outrageous that, like, you know, we can't predict here. Based on the evidence we have, I think it's South Africans.
Matt, final word to you in 30 seconds if you can. Sorry to push you.
You're right, Joe. Now look, Rory summed it up very well. Couldn't agree more. Unless there is something significantly new strategically from the Lions, if they play a similar game, they will not beat the Africans. The Africans will strangle them at that. They will physically dominate them, and they will kick points, and then maybe we might see some magic from one of their individuals. But it's certainly advantage South Africa. They'll be better for the run, and I can't see a way the Lions can get around it. They do something different. Yes, they keep doing the same thing. No, the South Africans will beat them.
Okay. Matt, good to talk to you. It's been a while. Great to have you back on. And Rory O'Connor, as ever, of the Irish Independent. Thanks, gents. Great stuff.
The 2021 British and Irish Lions Tour.
On Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, lead partner of the British and Irish Lions.